Welcome back to the Tanakh Study Center series on Neviim Rishonim. Today, our share will focus on the end of Shmuel Aleph, Prakim Lamed and Lamed Aleph, and the beginning of Shmuel Bet, Perak Aleph and Shmuel Bet. The primary focus of today's share will be on the topic of Amalek. First, we'll talk about how Amalek relates to these chapters, and then we're going to use this as a springboard to discuss the mitzvah to wipe out Amalek, because it is also the topic of this week's Parshat HaShavua, Parshat B'Shalach. And furthermore, the mitzvah of Amalek, for some reason, is a mitzvah which is special for the king of Israel. The goal of today's shir will be try to understand why is it that it is specifically the king of Israel who has to destroy Amalek, and why is that mitzvah given to Shaul earlier in this book, and why is that mitzvah completed by David as the book continues. Let's begin with how the topic of Amalek fits into our story at the end of Shmuel Aleph. As you recall, there's a battle about to take place between the Plishtim and Shaul in the northern part of Israel, in the Gilboa. David was invited by Achish, one of the generals of the Plishtim, one of the leaders of their cities, to join them in battle against Shaul, hoping that David would be helpful in that battle. The colleagues of Achish don't like the idea. And in chapter 29, we find out how David was sent home by Achish. Achish actually even apologized to David for the fact that his colleagues didn't trust him. David returns, though, to his camp in Siklag. What did he find in Siklag? In Perek Lamed, we read about how when David returns to Siklag, his camp was totally burnt, and all the women and children and all of their property was looted by the Amalekites, by Amalek. This first brings up a question. How could anyone be left from Amalek if, according to what we read in Perek Tedvav, the only survivor of Amalek was Agag, and Agag was killed? So there's the famous Medrash, she had a child that night, and from there we have Haman, Hagagi. But in Pshat, it would be hard to fathom that from one person, we would have so many hundreds of Amalekites raiding David's camp. We're going to read about 400 of them running away at the end of that battle, and David killing the rest of them. It seems like there's hundreds of Amalekites. It seems like Amalek is all over the place. And it's hard to explain that Shaul actually got rid of all of Amalek except for Agag. Some commentators claim that he only wiped out the city of Amalek, but many other tribes of Amalek remained. And today's year, I want to go to a bit of a different direction and understand Amalek not as something genetic, not as a nation, a certain people from a certain tribe specifically, of a certain descendant of Esav, but rather something more generic, a type of behavior which is typical of Amalek. It might have begun as a family trait of the nation of Amalek that began from Esav, but later on, that name Amaleki could be used to describe a certain type of behavior, which we're going to see in this chapter in Perek Lamed and also in Perek Aleph, and we'll also see in our study of Amalek throughout Tanakh. But let's begin with what happens in Perek Lamed, because in chapter 30, we can get a very good snapshot of how these Amalekites behaved. There's a good reason why Amalek attacks David's camp in Siklag when David's away. We're going to see over and over again that Amalek doesn't attack an army against an army. Amalek is not a nation that has their own land, their own territory, their own culture, their own cities, their own industry, etc. Rather, they seem to be a rather nomadic tribe, and they thrive on the prey of innocent and defenseless people. If you notice, all through Tanakh, we usually find them in the Negev, in the south, or what's called beforehand, in Perek Tedvav, Michavila v'Adshor. Chavila probably somewhere in Mesopotamia, and Midbar Shur al-Panei Mitzrayim, which is on the outskirts of Egypt. It seems like Amalek is always wandering along the international trade routes in the desert, and along those trade routes, you can't keep a regular army there the entire time, and what they do, they wait for travelers to go by, people who are not defended, people who are weak, or people traveling in small groups, they're able to swoop down on them, steal their belongings, capture them, take their women and children, and they don't kill them. Their goal isn't to kill people. Their goal is to sell them. They sell them into slavery, and they take the booty, etc. A type of piracy, which we're familiar with in modern history, like piracy on the seas, where not every ship could have a guard with it, and piracy was a tremendous threat to free trade. In the same way, we have trade going through the Middle East, and Amalek seems to be the nation that's constantly attacking and picking on the defenseless travelers along that trade route. And therefore, we're going to find they steal women and children, not for the sake of killing them, but for the sake of taking them as captives and selling them as slaves. In Perek Lamed, we get a little snapshot of that type of behavior. Because when did they go to Tziklag? They went to Tziklag when David was away fighting a battle. His camp was left pretty much defenseless. Only the women and children were there, together with their belongings, with their cattle and sheep. And when David comes, he finds it's all taken away. David decides to go and chase after them. God gives him the green light and gives him encouragement that he'll be able to find the enemy. But the way they find the enemy is very interesting. If we look in Perek Lamed Pasuk Yud Gimel, in verse 13, let's read about this person that David finds who gives him the information of where Amaleki is camping out. Beforehand, they found an Ishmithri in the field, back in Pasuk Yud Aleph, back in verse 11. They find an Egyptian man who's dying in the middle of the field in the desert, and they give him some water, give him some food, they bring him back to life. And then they begin to interrogate him and want to know where he's from. Again, in Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vemer lo David, lemi ata? Where are you from? I'm a young Egyptian. Eved l'ish Amaleki. I'm a servant, I'm a slave to an Amalekite. My master abandoned me. Ki chaliti. I became sick, I became ill. Hayom shosha, already 3 days. Here we have a case of an Egyptian who is a slave to an Amalekite. I'm assuming, how did he become a slave? This seems like an Egyptian who might have been traveling and might have been near the border, and the Amalekites came and they stole him. And he became now a slave to Amalek, Isha Maleki. Now, this slave became sick, became ill. Instead of taking care of him, what does his master do? His master abandoned him. Because he's sick, he can't take care of him anymore. So you know what? Let him die. And he abandons him in the field, in the desert, basically leading him to die. And now he explains later what happened. But here again, we have a little snapshot of how Amalek acted. Here they steal an Egyptian teenager, a Nar Mitzri. And the master of this Nar Mitzri sees that his servant or his slave is ill and just leaves him to die. It's already been 3 days, and luckily David finds him and brings him back to life by feeding him. David wants to know if he will help him find the Amalekite to attack this camp. And listen later on in Pasuk Tetvav. V'emre lav David. David asked him, can you show me where this battalion of Amalek is encamping? Swear to me, I'll promise to tell you if you promise to me that you won't kill me, or if you promise me not to return me to my master, then I'll give you the information. The last thing this Nar Mitzri wants to do is to go back and be a servant again for this Isha Maleki. So here again, we have an example of how Amalek behaved. Finally, this Nar brings David and his men to where the Amalekim are encamping. And what do they find? In Pasuk Tetzayin, we read what he finds. Bayirudehu, this Nar brings him down to their campsite. V'inei netushim al pnei haaretz. Ochrim v'shotim v'chogegim b'chol ha-shalal ha-gadol asher l'chu me'eretz plishtim u'me'eretz Yehuda. They did not only take shalal buri from the area of the where David is, they took from all the area of the Plishtim. The Plishtim are now battling Israel, and therefore there's a big war that's taking place in the northern part of Israel, near Emek Israel by the Geboa. So both Jewish troops and Plishtim troops are up north fighting. Surprise, surprise, we find Amalek taking advantage of that situation and robbing all the cities in the southern part of the land of the Plishtim and of Yehuda. And what are they doing with the shalah, with the booty? They're eating and drinking and having a good time from all the shalah, from all the booty that they've taken. In Pasuk Yud Zayin, we find how David fights them all day long until the next day, and no one got away except Ki Marbamot Ish Nar Asher Rachvu Al Gumaliv Yanusu. Here we find that David wipes out all of them except for 400 who are able to get away on camels. If the Pasuk tells us that only 400 got away, the impression is there were a lot of Amalekim there, probably somewhere in the thousands, who David was able to defeat. Now the question will be what to do with the shalah. This war against Amalek is a little bit different than the war that Shaul had. We'll talk about the war that Shaul had later on and the shalal and the booty in that battle. Here, David is saving the shalal that was already taken from people. If you look in Pasuk Yitched, it says, Vayatzel David et kol asher lachu Amalek, v'chteinu shav yitzel David. David saved the women and the children and their property, but all the booty that Amalek had taken from the neighboring cities especially in Yehuda, in the land of the Plishtim, where David was. What does David do with that shalal? David doesn't keep it for himself. David divides it up evenly among his men. There's a story later on that he divides it evenly with the people who go to battle and also the 200 who stayed behind and watch the equipment. But also he sends a present to the inhabitants of Yehuda, who are also plagued by this race of the Amalekites. And in the end of Perek Lamed, we see how David sends from this shalal to this Kenim of Yehuda, to all the cities that were probably robbed by Amalek as well. So it could be that the reason why David is allowed to take from the shalal and return it, because he's returning items that were taken from the people, as opposed to making an offensive move against Amalek and taking shalal that Amalek had taken from other countries and other people. If you look how David words the shalal that he sends to the people of Yehuda, if you look in Pasach Chavav, it says, "Vayavo David al Tiklag, vayshalach mi'ashalal lezignei Yehuda l'reihu l'mor, hinei lechem bracha mishlau oyvei Hashem." He doesn't say this is a present from the enemies of David. He said this is a present from the enemies of God. Amalek, he defines as oyvei Hashem. Hashem despises the behavior of Amalek, and therefore, in this context, it seems to be okay what David is doing with the shalal. Later in Perek Aleph, we find an alternate story of Shaul's death. In the last chapter of Shmo Aleph, in Perek Lamed Aleph, we find the official story of Shaul's death. How he sees he's going to die, and he's afraid that they're going to mutilate him, or they're going to show off that they've captured the king of Israel, and therefore he would rather die in his own hand than be killed by the Plishtim in public. There's a famous topic here about whether it's permitted in certain cases to commit suicide, yes or no. We're not going to go into that topic today, but that's something, if anyone wants to study that topic, are there ever times that suicide is permitted or required? The source of any discussion always begins with the details in Perek Lamed Aleph, in Shmo Aleph. There we find that Shaul seems to have killed himself. In the beginning of Shmo Aleph, we find a slightly different account of that story, where a certain person comes to David in Ziklag, carrying the crown and the bracelet of Shaul, and coming and bragging to David that he was the one who killed Shaul. Now listen carefully how this person tells the story to David of how Shaul died. We're going to begin in Shmo Bet Perek Aleph, Pasukei. There's a young lad who came to tell him that he had killed Shaul, and he brings him the crown and the bracelet of the king. "How do you know that Shaul died?" he asked him. I happened by chance to be in Har Gaboah. I see Shaul lying down on his own sword. Then he turned around and saw him, and he called out to me. And listen carefully how the story is told of how Shaul arrives at his final death. Shaul asked this nar, "Who are you?" "I'm an Amalekite," which is really strange. Shaul begs this Amalekite to kill me because he's in terrible pain, and he asks this Amalekite to kill him. First of all, we should notice the irony, and surely the prophetic irony of the story, where whether it's true or not, because later on, David either doesn't believe the story and uses it as an excuse to execute him, or at least he believes part of the story. But either way, the very fact that in Perek Aleph we find the story of Shaul's final death coming in the hands of someone who calls himself as an Isha Maliki, in itself is ironic, and again fits into beautifully the theme of Sefer Shmuel, that Shaul has lost his kingdom because of his sin against Amalek. However, for the purpose of our shiur, we want to talk about the Amaleki nature of this person. If this person is indeed some type of Amalekite, when David asks him, "Who are you?" in Pasuk Yud Gimel, and he answers, "Vayomer ben ish ger Amaleki onochi," "I'm the son of either a ger, someone who became Jewish from Amalek, or a son of a person who's a stranger who is Amalek." It's not clear whether this person actually became Jewish or not. It seems more like he's an Amalekim, which we'll try to show why in a minute. The question is, why would the Amalekim be in this battle? If our assumption is true that Amalek and the nature of this nation or these people is to take advantage of situations as wars, then it seems like here is someone from Amalek knowing there's battles taking place, and after the battles are over, they start going from battlefield to battlefield looking for the shalal, looking to take booty, looking in some way to rob or take possessions of people who tragically died in battle. So that adds again to our understanding of Amalek. It's a type of a character as opposed to a specific nation like any other nation. The actual reason for why David decides to execute this person as opposed to rewarding him, it's clear that this person who brought the crown of Shaul to David was assuming that he would be honored and praised for his loyal behavior to David. That we will discuss in our next year, where we have a very similar story with Rechav and Bana when they bring the head of Ish-Boshet to David. But to conclude our year, I'd like to prove from other sources this understanding of Amalek as a nation whose very existence is dedicated to looting and robbing defenseless people and taking advantage of tragic situations. Let's begin with Parshat B'Shalach, this week's Parshat Shavua, where we have the story of Amalek and the battle against the people of Israel. If you remember in Perek Yud Zayin, in chapter 17, in Sefer Shemot, in the beginning of that chapter, Am Yisrael arrives in the campsite of Rephidim, and there's no water for the people to drink. The people become very, very thirsty. They cry to Moshe. Moshe tells them to be patient. That will help them. It doesn't seem to help. And then finally, God then gives Moshe Rabbeinu the solution. And instead of giving Moshe Rabbeinu a solution in Rephidim itself, in Pasuk Hey, in Perek Yud Zayin, Hashem tells Moshe as follows, V'yomer Hashem el Moshe, Avor lifnei ha'am, walk in front of the people, V'kach itcha mizikne Yisrael, take with you from the elders of Israel, U'matcha asher ikita bateyor, kach biyadcha v'alachta. Take with you not only the elders, also your matem, your staff, which you hit the Nile River with, and halachta, and take a walk. Take a walk to where? We will now see in the next pasuk. Hini omeid lefanecha sham al atzur b'chorev. God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, take a walk to the rock at Chorev, which is Har Sinai, where Moshe was before at the burning bush. V'kita batzur, hit there the rock at the mountain. V'yatsumimenu ma'im v'shataham. Take out water from that rock, and the people can drink. If you read the psukim carefully, the miracle of hitting the rock and water coming forth does not take place in Rephidim, in the same campsite where the people of Israel are encamping and dying of thirst. Rather, God tells Moshe Rabbeinu to go find water and hit the rock at Har Sinai, at Har Chorev. And that's why Moshe takes with him some of the elders of the camp to witness the event, so the word would get around to the rest of the people. We don't know the exact distance from Rephidim to Har Sinai, but it seems to be at least a day's walk. And we see in the beginning of chapter 19, in the beginning of Perek Yotet, in Pasuk Bet, Am Yisrael traveled from Rephidim to Har Sinai, and the reason why is obvious. If the campsite in Rephidim has no water, and the people there are dying of thirst, and the news now comes to the camp that we've hit water, there's a water source at Har Sinai, then it would only make sense that the camp would slowly move from Rephidim to Har Sinai, and that's exactly what takes place. In fact, in Parshat Ekev, in Perek Tet, I think around Pasuk Chaf Aleph, towards the end of the story in Parshat Ekev, where Moshe Rabbeinu tells over the story of Chet Egel, the sin of the golden calf, and he talks about how he took the golden calf and ground it into little pieces and put its ashes into the Nachal HaYored Minahar, into the river valley that came down from the mountain, we see for sure that during the entire time in Har Sinai, this water source provided water for the entire nation for the whole year they camped at Har Sinai. It's also interesting to note that Har Sinai, before it became the source of the Torah, was also a source of water. And the famous dictum of Chazal, that in Maim El Torah, that we have an analogy between the body's need for water for its physical existence, similar to its spiritual need for Torah. Let's return now to our story about Amalek. It seems from here that the Jewish people are now traveling from Rephidim to Har Sinai in order to drink the water. In the next pasuk, in Pasuk Chet, we are told, Vayavo Amalek, Vayilachem, Im Yisrael v'Rephidim. Amalek comes now and attacks Am Yisrael in Rephidim. But who's in Rephidim? The strong people and the leadership level people are already at Har Sinai. They went there to get the water. We can only assume that those able-bodied people, the people who weren't dying of thirst, ran ahead to Har Sinai to get water and maybe bring some of it back to the people in the camp and slowly move the camp towards Har Sinai. But on the very day when Moshe Rabbeinu and the elders hit water at Har Sinai and the strong people in the camp are moving their way to Har Sinai, and the rest of the people, the weak people, are left behind, that's exactly when Amalek comes and attacks Israel and Rephidim. Therefore, Moshe tells Yeshua, "Bachar lanu anashim, v'tzei hilachim b'amalek, machar onuchi nitzav rosh ha'giva, u'mate Elohim b'yodi." Moshe Rabbeinu tells Yeshua to attack Amalek, but he tells him tomorrow. Why tomorrow? Why not right away? If our assumption is true that they're far away, it will take a day to get the army together to fight Amalek. If you recall from Parshat Zachor that we read before Purim, where we also fulfill the mitzvah to remember to wipe out the memory of Amalek, in Sefer Devarim, Perek Chaf Hei, Pasuk Yud Zayin, chapter 25 in Devarim, verse 17, Zechor Asher Asalach Amalek, Baderech B'tzeitcha Mitzrayim, we're commanded to remember what Amalek did to us on the way when we left Egypt. Asher Korcha Baderech, he attacked us while we were traveling on the way. By Zanebecha, he hit the back of your camp, the tail of your camp. Kol Hanecha Shalim Acharecha, all the weak ones were behind you. Vata Ayef Yageh, and you were tired and worn out. V'lo Yarei Elohim. And Amalek was not fearing of God. We see from Parshat Zachor that who did Amalek attack? We see from Parshat Zachor that Amalek attacked specifically those who were weak and they were tired in the back of the camp as we were traveling. And this most likely refers to the way they attacked the Jewish people who were encamped at Rephidim, but moving to Har Sinai, the weaker people, the tired and the thirsty, lagging behind, those were the defenseless people that Amalek attacked. Yeshua had to come and save them the next day with this army that he organized from Har Sinai. Also, this phrase, V'lo Yarei Elohim, if we follow that phrase through most of its mentions in Sefer Bereshit and Sefer Shemot, we find a very common theme to it. The phrase Yarei Elohim we found earlier in the story of Avram and Avimelech. In chapter 20, in Perek Chaf, Pasuk Yud, when Avimelech questions Avram Avinu, why did he not tell him the truth about his wife? We read, Vayomer Avimelech el Avraham, Ma ra'ita ki asita tadavar hazeh? What did you see? What did you understand that you did this thing about lying and not telling us the truth about your wife? Vayomer Avraham, ki amarti, rak ein yirat Elohim b'makom hazeh, v'argun yadavar ishti. What did Avram explain? His assumption was that there is no Yirat Elohim in the city, Ravi Melech was, and therefore, he was afraid that he would be killed so that other people... I don't think Avram Avinu expected Avimelech and the people of the city where the Plishtim were living at that time would be God-fearing people in the sense that Am Yisrael has to be God-fearing, recognizing the one and only God. Rather, Yirat Elohim seems to be a more universal type of concept of moral and just behavior. Here again we see that Yirat Elohim is a phrase that the Torah uses to describe immoral behavior, unethical behavior, not necessarily in the realm of believing in the one God and the only God, but rather in the realm of universal ethical behavior. Another proof of this approach and this understanding of Yirat Elohim, we see from the story of Yosef and his brothers. Recall that Yosef is doing his best to hide his identity from his brothers and would definitely not want them to think that he's Jewish, but when he tells them, after accusing them of being spies and demanding that they all stay in jail except for one, and then after 3 days, he has a change of mind and says that I'll be nice to you, and instead of making you all stay in jail, you can all go back to the land of Canaan and bring back your brother and prove your innocence. Simply leave one brother behind. The phrase that Yosef uses there is, again, he tells his brothers, Et Elohim ani yareh. If you look in Perek Membet, in chapter 42 in Sefer Bereshit, Yosef tells his brothers after 3 days, this is what you can do and survive. Why? Et Elohim ani yareh, because I'm a God-fearing person. And then he tells him, leave one brother behind and the rest of you can go to your father's house and bring back the food, etc. and bring back your brother. Yosef is not telling him, I'm part of the people of Israel who believe in the one God. Rather, he's telling them, I'm a God-fearing person. And I would not do something so immoral and leave you all in jail. Rather, I'm going to give you a chance to prove you're innocent. In a similar manner, in the beginning of Sefer Shemot, Paro orders all the midwives to throw the male children into the river. However, the midwives, Shifra and Puah, we're told, do not follow that command. And they're described as follows, "Vatirena hamyaldot et Elohim." These midwives feared God, "V'lo asu kasher diber alem melech Mitzrayim, v'tchein et Eladin," not throwing the newborn babies into the river, but rather being ethical and kind and allowing the babies to live, that behavior is called Yirat Elohim. And finally, in our case, the story of Amalek, we are told this nation that goes and robs and attacks innocent and defenseless people, that's described as a nation without Yirat Elohim. Let's return, though, to Sefer Devarim in Perek Chaf Hei. It's called Parshat Zachor. And look at the wording of the commandment of when and why the Jewish people are supposed to wipe out Amalek. In Pasuk Yotet, we're told as follows. V'ayah ve'aniach Hashem Elohecha lecha mikol oivecha misaviv. after God gives you rest from all your enemies around you, ba'aretz asher Hashem Elokecha noten lecha nachla l'rishta, in a land that God is giving you as your inheritance to conquer, then timche et zechra Amalek, then you have to wipe out the memory of Amalek mitachat hashamayim, from under the heavens, lo tishkach, make sure not to forget. If Amalek is so bad, and if there's a mitzvah to get rid of Amalek, why is it that this mitzvah only applies after we've defeated all of our other enemies, and not only that, after we have rest from our enemies? And finally, why is this understood as a mitzvah that is given to the king? We saw after Shaul becomes king and defeats many of his enemies and brings some quiet to the borders, it is only then that God commands him, I remember now what Amalek did to you, and now it's time to go and fight Amalek. And even the Rambam in Hilchot Malachim, in the opening chapter, in the opening law of Hilchot Malachim, talks about the three mitzvot that the Jewish people have when they come into the land. The first would be to appoint a king, the second would be to destroy Amalek, and the third would be to build the Beit HaMikdash. So why is it that the commandment to destroy Amalek and to wipe out Amalek only applies after we have a king and after we have rest from all our enemies around us, especially this pasuk, v'yabaniach Hashem Elohecha lecha mikol ve'cha misaviv? That phrase is what the halacha bases itself on, that this is a mitzvah only after we have rest from our enemies around us. Now, if we have rest from our enemies around us, then why is Amalek a problem? It seems like if we have rest from all of our enemies, then Amalek should not be our enemy anymore. But it could be that's exactly why this is a mitzvah of a king. Instead of viewing this as some type of vendetta, some family feud from years back, that only because their great-great-grandparents once attacked us, we have to get back at them, and that would be very difficult in Jewish thought to think that we would have to wipe out a nation simply because of their genetic background, simply because of hundreds of years earlier they came from a certain family, if they themselves at that time were fine and not doing any harm to us. The explanation we prefer is that Amalek describes a type of behavior which was typical of Amalek in the time of the Bible, but later becomes typical of a type of behavior of any type of nation who acts in this form, this pirate type of behavior, attacking trade routes, attacking defenseless and innocent people. It becomes the responsibility of the Jewish nation after they have achieved quiet and peace on their own borders. Now it becomes their responsibility, in a certain sense, to act as an international policeman, at least in the area of the Middle East, to protect the trade routes and assure safe travel for anyone traveling between Mesopotamia and Egypt along the main highways of the Middle East. If we look back in Perek Tedvav, in the words of Shmuel to Shaul in Pasuk Yudchet, Shmuel reminds Shaul about his commandment. There he's told, Vayishlachacha Hashem badarech, vayomer, lech vechramta et hachataim et Amalek. God commanded Shaul to fight and wipe out the chataim et Amalek, those who have sinned Amalek. Amalek is described as a nation who had sinned. And finally, at the end of that chapter, when Shmuel himself takes Agag to execute him, the words that he tells Agag are as follows. Vayomer Shmuel in Pasuk Lamed Gimel in Perek Tedvav, Vayomer Shmuel kasher shikla nashim charbecha kein tishkal min nashim imecha. Just like your sword caused many women to lose their families, their husbands and their children, now your families, your mother will now become imashkula, she will now become a parent without a child, the same way that you did to many other mothers. So we see that the attack against Amalek by Shaul is not simply because this nation of Amalek were descendants of the nation that defeated us and attacked us hundreds of years earlier when we came out of Egypt. Rather, this nation of Amalek at that time is acting in the same way that their ancestors had acted, continuing the same type of behavior and the same type of sinning, not only against the Jewish people, but against mankind. One final proof of this is if we go back in Sefer Shoftim and look at all the battles that the Jewish people were fighting, notice how Amalek surfaces over and over again. If you go back to Perek Gimel in Sefer Shoftim, to the third chapter, and read about this, the battle we have with Eglon, the king of Moab, there we're told in Pasuk Yud Gimel, in Perek Yud Gimel, Ve'asof elav el bnei Amon v'Amalek, v'yelech v'yachat Yisrael v'yashu et Eret Marim. We're told how Eglon Melech Moab gathers together some of his allies, Amon with Amon and Moab, and Amalek, and they take over Eret Marim. So here we see Amalek in the battle with Amon and Moab. Later in Perek Vav, in the introduction of the story of Gidon, we find a similar mention of Amalek. And now we're talking about the northern part of the country, not the area of Ammon and Moab to the east, but rather to the north in Emek Israel in the Jezreel Valley. There we are told in Pasuk Gimel, Vaya im Zara Yisrael, when Israel would plant its fields up north, Vala Midyan v'Amalek u'bnei Kedem v'alu alav. Then Midyan and Amalek and Bnei Kedem would go and take the produce. Ve'chanu aleihem v'yashchitu et yivuch ha'aretz ad bo'ach ha'aza. They would take from all the produce of the land all the way down along the coastal plain and take over everything that Israel had planted. There the main war is against Midian, but there again we find Amalek with the rest of Israel's enemies taking advantage of the situation. So we find two other instances where Amalek comes and attacks and joins Israel's other enemies and try to attack. It would also help us explain why the commandment to wipe out Amalek is for all generations and not a mitzvah l'sha'ah, not a mitzvah for one generation or the generation coming to the land of Israel, like in the time of Yeshua, to wipe them out and be finished with it. If Amalek is a phenomena, a type of behavior, which the Jewish people have to fight and stand against, then it makes sense that this pattern of Amalek may appear throughout the history of nations at any time, and not necessarily be the descendants of this people. On the other hand, if it was simply one family, then it would make more sense for that nation to be included in a one-time mitzvah to wipe out, like the mitzvah of the seven nations. But because the mitzvah of Amalek is a mitzvah for all generations to remember and to wipe out their memory, it would make a lot more sense if it's because of their behavior, their unethical behavior, their lack of Yirat Elohim. In that sense, the nation of Amalek is thematically the exact opposite of the people of Israel. If the people of Israel, the nation that God chose to represent them, to be the model of ethical and just moral behavior for all mankind, in contrast to the nation of Amalek, who are characterized by their unethical behavior and their lack of respect for fellow men, we can appreciate the comparison between the people of Israel and Amalek that we find in Chazal, both being called Reshit. If you recall, in the blessings of Bilam, in the end of Parshat Balak, in Perek Avdalad, in Sefer Bamidbar, in Pasach Chaf, there were told, Vayart Amalek, Vaisama Shalov Vayamar, he sees Amalek, and says as follows, Reshit Goyim Amalek, Vachrito Adei Oved. He calls Amalek Reshit Goyim. And then later in Yirmiyahu, we find the people of Israel being described in a similar manner, where Yirmiyahu says in Perek Bet Pasuk Gimel, Kodesh Yisrael Hashem Reshit Tvota, Am Yisrael is also considered a type of Reshit to God. In that sense, the Jewish people stand on one hand, representing the concept of God and godliness and just and moral and ethical behavior as a message to all mankind, as God commanded Avraham Avinu when he was first chosen, that he knows he will command his children to do tzedek u'mishpat. In contrast to that, we have the nation of Amalek, who has no scruples, who doesn't care about any ethics at all, and just swoops down and attacks innocent people. In that sense, the nation of Israel stands in contrast to the nation of Amalek, and that message, for sure, should be eternal. And hence, when we reach peace and security for ourselves, we still have a duty to help enable that for all the nations of the world. In closing, I think this could also explain one other technical halakha that comes hand in hand with Amalek. If we saw in the battle of Amalek, when God commanded Shaul to wipe out Amalek and not to take from the shalom, not to take from the booty, if the whole existence of Amalek is in order to take booty, if their whole goal is not fighting a war for some border dispute, but rather their entire war and their entire attacking of other nations is simply to take booty and to loot and to take advantage, then when the Jewish people were commanded, as Shaul was, as a war of God against Amalek, and to show how God despises the behavior of Amalek, when we go and fight them, we cannot take from the shalom. A, that shalom probably doesn't belong to us, and B, it's giving a message that the entire reason why we're attacking them is because all they care about is shalom. And to show that, we take that shalom and give it to God instead. We explained earlier that when David fights Amalek, it's more of a personal fight because Amalek had taken their own goods and their own belongings. And therefore, David is allowed to take the shalom when he fights Amalek in that specific battle. But the battle of Shaul against Amalek, after he had already received some quiet from his enemies around him, and now it's time to do a more universal battle against Amalek, there the commandment not to take from the shalom is much more critical. In our next year, we'll continue our study of Shmuel Bet, And we'll see the different events that take place until David is able to secure his kingdom over the entire people of Israel. If you can prepare, make sure you learn up until Perek Daled or Perek Hey in Shmuel Bet.